Welcome to the iPod, a podcast series from Ophthalmology Times, where we engage with key opinion leaders about the latest innovations in the areas of surgery, clinical diagnosis, drug therapy, research, technology, or practice management.
So we're joined here today by the father and son duo of John J. Grandy and John S. Grandy, certified financial planners with the Grandy Financial Services and longtime contributors to Ophthalmology Times Money Matters column. Thanks so much for joining us. And since we last spoke, the coronavirus pandemic had only been with us a few weeks. And we talked then about the financial and emotional impacts of managing COVID in an ophthalmology practice. So it seems appropriate to flash forward now as thoughts turn to ophthalmologists, what they should be doing to prepare financially for, you know, for the fall, an uncertain school year. We have a presidential election, the fourth quarter, you know, of what has been an extraordinary year, to say the least. And so, you know, in what has been an unpredictable year, how should ophthalmologists approach working on a financial plan or revisiting their financial plan, especially if they had been financially impacted by the pandemic? What should their portfolio look like in this time?
Well, that's a great question. And not that you didn't list enough things for us to be concerned about, but there's also the possibility of a second wave. It's hard to believe that almost 6 months have gone by since the last time you and I, when we started this. So much has happened, basically for half a year. And I find, one, it's amazing how we can acclimate so easily to life changes like this. I mean, one day you're traveling and you're out and you're living a normal life, and the next thing, completely unexpected, you can't do anything. I mean, your business could be closed. Yeah. You haven't been to my office in 6 months. It's just amazing. And yet somehow we do acclimate to it. Well, it's been a great learning experience for us. And I hear the same thing from a lot of other people. A lot of people tell me, well, you know, since we've been home and we don't have a lot to do, we've become very much more introspective and start questioning maybe your values and things that are as important or more important than making money and running after things all the time. The one thing I think that became very obvious is the fact that panicking or emotions can definitely lead to bad decisions. I mean, we've always known that before. We saw it in 2001, 2008, but really never as much as this, because this was overwhelming somehow. Maybe people were worried about life and death and it became, you know, too emotional for them. I know personally for all of our clients across the country, all the ophthalmologists that we have, out of all of them, only two panicked, and two people did get out of the market. We, they were allocated to certain exposure in the market and they were supposed to stay with that as the others did. They didn't. So they got out really almost at the low. And now that the market has come back to where it is, and in some cases higher than it was, in most cases, they're asking, well, you know, should I get back in now? Should I get back in now? Their losses were real losses. It wasn't a paper loss, where the other clients that didn't get out, their losses were paper losses. And now not only do they not have losses, but they actually are ahead of where they were back in those months. And so what do you say to somebody? Oh yeah, get in at the high. What you're supposed to do is you buy low and you sell high. And panic can actually get you into selling low and buying high, which hurts the plan. So it's so important to have a plan. And I know, John, if you want to go into the benefits of that, you know.
Absolutely. So yeah, thank you. So we did see people make some mistakes, and we saw that again, like my father said, in 2008, 2001. One of the things that we find very helpful is to have a plan in place. And we think it's always important to have a plan in place, but given how much volatility there's been, we think it's more important now than ever. In a so-called normal year, we may look at a plan once or twice to make sure the goals are still the same. The portfolio allocation is still in line with the target allocation. The overall probability of success, which is what we look at, is within a comfortable range. And that there have been no big changes to the financial or personal life of the client that need to be addressed. In an unprecedented year like we've seen in 2020, we think it's more important than ever to review that plan, and even more often than once or twice. So in order to give the client some peace of mind and give them some advantages, one of the things we really think the plan does is it gives you the ability to model different scenarios to see how the success rate has been impacted. So if you feel like your portfolio is down a certain amount and you're not sure if your goals have been adjusted, or now your probability is lower, being able to go in there and say, you know, we have been able to determine the probability of success given the new goal, possibly retiring earlier. So the probability is within a comfortable range. They have a peace of mind of knowing they are able to retire earlier. And if not, they can determine what goals are more important and adjust the plan. Another reason it's so important to review the plan during these volatile times is to ensure the asset allocation is still appropriate given your risk tolerance and time horizon. It's important to develop a target portfolio as part of your financial plan and only take the amount of risks necessary to provide you with an acceptable probability of success. That's going to be different for everyone. It depends on your unique situation. But regardless of your portfolio's allocation, if you were in cash, you would have seen a deep and steep decline at the onset of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So given the markets, this has added a lot of the emotional strain over the past several months with these large swings that we've seen. It was very difficult for doctors to understand what was happening with the virus and their practices, no less seeing their portfolio values plummet in some cases. The market had one of its fastest and deepest bear markets in history. The crash began on February 20th, and by March, markets worldwide were down 25 to 30%. With this as a backdrop, one of the most important pieces of advice we can offer, as my father mentioned before, is to not let your emotions dictate your investment decisions. Time and time again, individuals will sell out of stocks when the pain is at a point they can no longer tolerate, and they are in essence locking in those losses, and in most cases not able to get back into the market before it goes back up again. As we mentioned, only a couple of our clients did this, but we're in a very tricky position now where we see the market is now climbing and we're trying to help the client get back to their target portfolio. The last thing we want to do, however, is get them in when the market has now rebounded. And if we see another pullback, they're not only going to have the initial losses, but they're going to have losses on top of that. So we really think that, you know, and we saw that in April and May when the market rebounded very sharply. So if you had just gone to the sideline with the idea that, let me see if I can just wait this out a little bit, and then I'm going to jump back in when things start to go up, most people would not be able to do that, just based again on the speed of the increases. And the market a lot of times will go up as fast as it went down. Just an example to see how bad timing can impact the portfolio. If we look at a $100,000 investment in the S&P 500 from 2000 to 2019, if you were to stay invested for that entire 20-year period, your $100,000 investment would be worth $324,019, so a nice return. If you had missed the best 5 days during that period, your portfolio would be $214,950. If you missed the best 15 days, it's $127,102. If you'd missed the 25 best days over 20 years, your portfolio was only at $82,000. So actually less than what you started with. So it just really echoes the importance of trying to stay the course and not let your emotions get to you. Another area that you can review when looking at the plan, especially during these volatile times, is your expenses. Determine what your essential expenses are and what your discretionary expenses are. You want to make sure that you have the essential expenses covered whenever you can by as much predictable income as possible. This can include Social Security, if you have a defined benefit plan, rental income, guaranteed annuity income. I don't know, Dad, if you want to speak a little bit about some of the annuity guarantees that clients have been looking at, and there's usually a bad kind of rap about annuities, but in times like this, there are certain ones out there that we think are sometimes favorable to put in as a strategy within the portfolio.
Well, I think one of the points is, of course, why people put them down is because of the fees. And they've been so restructured that there are actually products out there that have absolutely no fees at all, yet still offer the same protection. So they're worth taking a second look at this point.
Absolutely. Good point. Once you have those essential expenses taken care of, then you want to look at the discretionary expenses. These are things like travel, entertainment, unfortunately. Not a lot of that going on right now, but we're hoping that we'll get to a point in life again where we can actually get on a plane and go somewhere. I know the one thing my wife is most upset about is the travel aspect of everything going on. So when you have your expenses broken down into discretionary and non-discretionary, you then can take those non-discretionary expenses and use a withdrawal rate from the rest of the portfolio. So the nice thing about that is if we have a good market and your portfolio is higher, and let's say we stick to a 4% withdrawal rate or maybe lower, as the market goes up, you'll have more discretionary spending. But as the market comes back down, like we saw earlier this year, you'll actually have to tighten the belt because that percentage should stay constant. So it's a way to control what's coming out of the portfolio. We think that's a really good way to do cash flow planning. And as physicians are starting to look at, maybe I want to retire early, maybe, can I retire early? looking at your expenses closely, listing them down, which is never a fun project, but I think it makes a lot of sense, and then trying to break them again into those essential and discretionary expenses. That again is something that we find is very helpful and does create some peace of mind for the clients as they're trying to plan out how are they gonna actually cover those expenses if they do retire early.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's kind of take a deeper dive into that, you know, for ophthalmologists who may be nearing retirement or maybe just taking another look at their priorities that have shifted during these recent months. You know, what are some unique considerations, you know, for taking retirement or early retirement or even expanding or reducing, you know, their hours in practice, just working towards that goal?
Good question. And working with so many ophthalmologists, many of our clients did see their practices either shut down or greatly reduced during the early stages of the pandemic. It's interesting as we've seen different areas of the country deal with the virus and its impact at different times. So we're here in New Jersey. We saw the largest impact early on, along with New York, but now we see practices back up to full capacity, which is nice. Other areas have spikes a little bit later, so those practices may have to be prepared for reduction in revenue and patients at a different stage. Overall, our experience with speaking to clients is that they took the original hit to revenue and have since seen patients and revenue at or close to pre-virus levels, which is a positive. So there was definitely a period where they did not have income coming in, which was very scary. There wasn't a clear picture of when that might start again. It's impossible to predict how the fall and winter will unfold and how the reopening may impact. They may be impacted by possible increases in cases. I would say that overall, we've adopted protocols that make it possible to visit a doctor's office. I actually have my annual physical later today. And with the proper safety measures in place and testing, we can hopefully avoid the type of shutdown revenue losses we experienced in the beginning. We also have the potential for therapeutics and a vaccine, which will greatly reduce the possibility of a second shutdown. So we do think that there's reason for concern in the revenue loss. We don't know it'll be hopefully as severe as we saw when no one really knew exactly how this was going to unfold. Hopefully we see the practices maybe reduce if they have to, but still stay in the position where they can see patients and still have some revenue coming in. So as we dealt with the shutdown, practices we worked with either continued paying staff, which was your other question, for the period they were shut down. Some took advantage of the PPP program to offset some of the potential impact to the practice for the loss of revenue and continued payroll and practice expenses. Others did reduce staff, but in most cases it was temporary and they were back to having full staff in place. So that was also a positive thing. And the physicians we work with, the smaller practice, are very loyal to a lot of their staff. And so they really wanted to make sure that they were taking care of them, even in the face of what was happening. It is important to have a clear picture of the practice's expenses and have contingency plans in place, but they're forced to once again reduce the patient load and practice revenue. So how long can you afford to stay solvent, keep the practice running when you do need to shut down again? So I think most of our clients have done that, but just really know what your monthly expenses are, what your salary is for your employees, and you know how long can you stay viable and when do you need to start making reductions?
You know, obviously it's a very uncertain time for everyone, and you know there's a lot of anxiety, uncertainty. You know, how might having a financial plan help to kind of ease or reduce any anxiety that ophthalmologists may be feeling, you know, during this certain time of the pandemic?
Well, one of the things that we've noticed is, and what surprised to us, were how many doctors all of a sudden decided that they were being forced into retirement. Some of it was not forced, but it was forced by the virus. They didn't want to be face-to-face with patients. And so the phone started ringing, and unexpectedly from people between the ages of 60 all the way up into their 80s are saying, can we retire? Would we be able to step away right now, and would we be okay? How would we have to reduce our lifestyle, or are we going to be able to, you know, to retire the way we hoped we were? And because they had a plan, and because we can rerun the numbers properly, see what probability, if the probability has changed, you know, thankfully, and there were quite a few of them that retired, but every one of them was able to retire and know for sure that they would, you know, they would be okay in retirement. So I think, you know, we'd spoke about it before, having a plan is so important because, you have to take the guessing out. You can't do this by gut feeling or by thinking that you're going to be okay. I think you have to take serious steps and look at the contingencies. And even now, the way we do our planning, we're able to plug in all kinds of contingencies, including long-term care problems or depressions or repression or recessions, whatever it is. And I just like to add to that, you know, Trouty and I, our other partner in Grandy Financial Services, we started out in Naples, Florida. And almost all of our doctors, I mean, all of our clients back then, were retired. And I will never, ever forget the one woman that came into the office and she sat down across from me. It reminded me of my grandmother. And she was in her 70s. She was just widowed. And we were doing planning and she reached over and put her hand on my hand. And she looked me in the eye with these, you know, very vulnerable eyes and said, "You know, I'm putting my life in your hands, right, Mr. Grandy?" And I had never really experienced the extent of the importance of protecting people's security and their lives. And that was a changing point in my life and Trouty's. And then, of course, John coming into the firm 25 years ago, you know, has the same values. And we became very conservative, never looking to, you know, squeeze out every little ounce of profit that you can get. We're so much more interested in preservation of principal, whatever return you have to get to make sure that your goals are fulfilled, to do that without taking an ounce more risk than you would be, you know, you'd have to. But we also really we like to put in parts of the plan that have guarantees, you know, do something to stop the downside, do something to give lifetime income for, you know, for partners or, you know, husband and wife. And when this epidemic came, I do have to say that there was very little panic because, like John mentioned before, if the essentials are taken care of, and they are taken care of by guarantees and by income you can depend on for as long as you live, it takes a lot of the stress out of it. You can't overemphasize the importance of having a plan that takes in almost every contingency, including this one, which we really never expected. This, you know, just when you get to be my age and you think, well, okay, I've seen it all. And then all of a sudden you look at, oh my God, I haven't seen it all. I didn't imagine a world epidemic, you know, like this thing. But I do have to admit, because of the philosophy that we use, which is let's plan for anything happening in the future, you know, that really paid off. And if you think about it, right, for a second, right? If you think, well, okay, I'm going to take added risk and I'm going to try to squeeze out the extra percents in return. And you look at the plan and you say, well, you know what? That doesn't make any difference. Whether I make that money or I don't make that money, it does not change my lifestyle. On the other hand, you look at the consequence of loss, and by taking that risk and it doesn't work out, now you're looking and you're thinking, holy God, I've lost everything. So if you have it made and if you do this scientifically and you really plan, then I don't know, it's sort of like it's on automatic, it's almost like on pilot, you know, automatic pilot. It just keeps going and then you just review it. Now we review it more often than we used to. Instead of a year, we're looking at it, you know, I don't want to say every day, but very, very often. So I don't know. I just can't say enough about having a written plan that can be adjusted and can be monitored, and that would give you the peace of mind that you should have. And that would, you know, take out any, you know, extra risk that you really should not have on the table. I don't know if that answered your question or not, but.
Yeah, it did.
That's.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And as John Sr. said, we have seen firsthand doctors who may have been contemplating retirement, but once they saw the full impact of the virus and the uncertainty surrounding it, decided it may be time to retire now. And again, as my father discussed during the last video conference, this type of event can have you step back and revisit what's truly important in one's life. In order to take an earlier retirement or possibly reduce your time working, it's important to clearly know what your expenses will be, as we discussed earlier. So that's really a big step. What exit strategies are available for your practice, if you own your practice, and if your resources are able to sustain you through your retirement years. As we discussed earlier, also having a plan in place that you can work together with your advisor to model different scenarios and their probability is key to knowing if you're in a position to adjust your goals. So again, looking at your resources, having an asset allocation set up where you feel like it has the amount of risk necessary to give you the return, put some hedges in there, whether it be through funds or through annuities, as we discussed, and then really know what your expenses are and how are you going to have the cash flow planning piece of this is huge, especially as you approach retirement. You're 6 months or a year away from retirement and you haven't looked at your expenses closely and have some idea where the money is going to come from to create that monthly paycheck to replace your earned income, then you should really look at that with your advisor because that's, again, a key point in the overall planning. In the modeling aspect, once you do that and you do the little bit of hard work to get the plan in place, modeling is a lot easier because you just can change, well, what if I retire a year earlier? What impact does that have on my probability? And for our planning, we look for a probability between 75 and 90%. To us, that's a comfortable zone. If you're there, you have a pretty high probability and confidence level of reaching the goals. So if you had an 85% probability and you said, I really think I want to try to get out a year earlier, we can look at that. Maybe your probability is 82%, which is still within that comfort zone. And now we can say, yes, we can move forward with that plan. Or it might say it's 62%. And then we have to say, this isn't realistic. You either have to work longer, cut down hours so you have some income coming in, or maybe you're willing to give some other goals up. Maybe you're willing to have lower income during retirement if you can retire earlier. So again, the planning piece of it is really key.
Mm-hmm. And just one last question for both of you then. So as we enter 2021, you know, are there any special pearls that ophthalmologists should consider as they enter into that year, you know, after the presidential election? I mean, with the whole new year of being a few more months into the pandemic, any special considerations?
Looking at the markets and where we've been, there have been a couple of positives. I mean, a lot of people might be surprised at how high the market's gone to all-time new highs here, but the Federal Reserve has never put as much behind any kind of event as this, much more than 2008, much quicker than 2008. So one of the positives for the market is we do have the Federal Reserve behind the economy 100%. I do think that's key. We also think that there could be some medical advancements over the next several months, which also would be very welcoming. And also the testing side, there's some pharmaceuticals that are offering tests now that can be done right on the spot. And if we have that, it would be easier to open things up and then test people before they come in. So any kind of news on that side of the equation would give the market more room and the economy more room to move forward. So we don't think you should be ultra conservative. We think you still want to have participation in case we do see the market move higher. But at the same time, there's a lot of uncertainty. And like you said, the election's coming around the corner. We don't know what that's going to look like. We don't know for sure what the virus is going to look like over the next several months, going into the winter months as well. And we are at all time high. So again, hedging the portfolio, having the exposure to try to participate, but at the same time, make sure it's balanced and make sure that you're protecting yourself. I think those are keys moving forward through the next several months because no one knows exactly how this is going to look come January 1st, let's say, of 2021.
Mm-hmm. I think you make great points, John. And also, I might just add that the fundamentals don't change. When you're laying out a plan, the fundamentals stay the same. You have goals, objectives, you have so much in resources, you're adding so much to it, you're going to take so much out of it. That doesn't change. The allocation to equity stays the same. You might change, there may be changes between different investments, but your exposure to the market doesn't go up and down. You're not going to be timing the markets, wondering what's going to happen and what might not happen. That's not necessary to do.
To that point, we don't think there should be big switches. But if you have, let's say, a moderate portfolio that might be 60% stocks and 40% bonds, one of the things that we might tend to do is that has a range. So in a market where we feel more confident, it might be 65% stocks. And in a market that we feel more conservative, it might go down to 55% stocks. Mm-hmm. So there could be some slight adjustments to that overall allocation, but you do not want to go from 60% stocks to 20, let's say, because you feel like you want to try to get out before things go bad. So, fine tuning, doing some tweaks, putting some different types of sectors in there might make sense. Technology has done very well this year. as we've seen, and we might see some dividend stocks start doing well as interest rates stay low and people are looking for yield. So there's things like that we can look at. But overall, as John Sr. said, we don't want to be making big moves in around the fundamentals of the plan do remain the same.
Also, Cheryl, you know, we've been working with Ophthalmology Times for over 20 years now. It's been our privilege to do so. And we have always offered your readers and your listeners to a retirement and, or investment analysis and not charge them for it. Many doctors have taken us up on that offer and gotten peace of mind for a second opinion on what they were doing, or they've had questions about their finances, and they're always welcome to contact us either email or call, and we'd be very happy to answer the questions best that we can. And you know, basically that's it. We're always there for our friends, the ophthalmologists.
All right, thank you. And certainly some very helpful and practical pearls for ophthalmologists in this uncertain time. We thank you both for your time, and we look forward to further updates from you in the coming months.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Great. Thank you very much, Cheryl. Stay safe.
Stay safe.
You too.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the iPod. We hope you subscribe at iTunes and let us know what topics you'd like to hear more about. Stay connected by going to ophthalmologytimes.com, subscribing to our newsletter, and following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.